Quinn is kind of brewing on his intro that he wants to say.
I thought you were going to say this is the time that Quinn's usually playing Arena, which is actually what's happening right now. But I'm also thinking about the intro a little bit.
Just the monkey, please. Endurance and Saga Frio. Another fire set where all the cards appeal. Lowest challenge attendance that we've ever seen. Only bands to rescue us from islands times 60. I'll send a ban request to Watsy. I'll send a ban request to Watsy. I hope that Ian gets mine. I hope that Ian gets mine. I hope that Ian gets my fan request for Legacy, yeah. Fan request for Legacy.
Hello and welcome to Canadian Threshold, McBain.
The Legacy podcast that is sleeping up 60 islands.
As prescribed.
You were supposed to keep going there, but I'll jump in. Because my name's Quinn Amore, and I'm here as always with my co-host, Brendan McBain, who you just heard.
Hello.
On his intro debut. Jeff Kinsey, how you doing?
Hello.
Jeff?
I'm sitting here pretty, having not intro debuted and still mocking the person that's trying.
Well, we can take some of the heat off of all both of you, because we can also introduce our very special guest, all the way down the I-5, which we will soon be able to drive down. We might be able to visit you in person. Jeremy Edwards. Jeremy, thanks for joining us, man.
How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Good to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
What's the saying? Is it like long-time listener, first-time host, or attendee?
I think so.
We'll get into all of that stuff and more soon. Before we get started, as usual, Jeff, there's actually some exciting housekeeping this week.
Oh, I got some details. Last time we complained that Watsy was pulling a card titan and not telling us anything about this. But now we have information about Eternal Weekend
happening. Hold on. What? I believe your specific thing last time was, just like every year, we're not going to have information. And then the moment we finish recording and we go to release this, all the information is going to be released. So you're welcome. I think that's exactly what you said.
Okay, that's true.
And here we are. So thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
You know, of note, they actually released this information 2 days ago. So they clearly listened and then thought, oh shit, we got to get on this. So the important headline, God Accounts, from November 15th to December 1st. I think it's the same $25 thing, and I think all the pricing is the same, where it'll cost you two tickets to enter a thing. But there's three legacy events. Friday, November 19th at 5 p.m. Saturday, the 20th at 2 a.m. I don't think I'm hitting that one. And Sunday, the 21st at 10 a.m. Also, Vintage is happening the week after, Friday the 26th at 5 p.m., Saturday 27th at 2 a.m., and Sunday 28th at 10 a.m. Very cool. Very excited to see Eternal Weekend dates down. Definitely going to play in, I suspect, at least the Friday and the Sunday one. The Saturday 2 a.m., probably not happening, but, you know, Stranger Things.
No, that was that's the secret layer. No, we're talking about Eternal Weekend.
The hashtag not sponsored.
Have any of you guys seen the art? I haven't seen any of these arts.
I scrolled through extremely quickly while getting these details.
They're all new, brand new, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's like the whole gimmick, isn't it? They always do like a slightly different art.
I think in previous years, it's been like the existing like MTGO art sometimes.
Oh, right. Yeah. The thing that was only a promo one time that nobody knows about.
Yeah, but it's like they've existed. I don't think these ones do.
I certainly haven't seen them before. You guys going to play any of them?
Quinn?
I took the entire week off work because I haven't gone anywhere this year. So I have tons of vacation time. So yeah, at least probably Friday and Sunday.
I was going to say, I'm like, could you shift your whole sleep schedule so that it lines up on the Saturday event properly? And then you're like kind of staying up late on the Friday, but going to bed at just the right time. Or you could just pull, who was it, like Anurag last year, where he played all three or something like that and top hitted two of them.
Yeah, that's like crazy.
If you go deep on Friday, you basically don't sleep and play Saturday, right?
Sick. Already up.
Is that your plan, Jeremy? Are you planning to play?
No.
Negative. Do you do any MTGO or are you mainly a paper player?
I have not done MTGO. I considered it last year and definitely looked into what it would cost, how long it would take me to become proficient. And I just didn't think that it was quite, going to work for me, I guess.
It's probably the most adult decision I've heard in a long time.
I was on the fence. I just have a hard time connecting with the digital Magic experience. I think it's okay to watch, but I definitely find it most fulfilling to play in person.
Yep.
Speaking from someone who had to take off all of his stops yesterday to win a match and win by like 4 seconds, there's some experiences in MTGO that you can't reproduce in paper, and that's one of them, and it's pretty incredible. It's like the worst experience, but it's, you know, just like one of those little microcosms.
There is like a set of MTGO achievements, which is like, you know, that both of you are moving all your stops and F6ing as fast as you can to like go through all your steps. And also like the kind of hidden triggers where somebody's sitting there and not realizing they have to click on their oath or something.
Yeah, there's a lot under the hood there.
Yeah, you don't need to concern yourself with any of that. But I guess it'll be cool to watch. Like, do you plan to watch any certain streams?
Oh, I actually, yeah, I watch streams pretty regularly. I watch Anurag's stream. I watch Lee Wynn's stream and Dugs. Some of these people haven't, like Dugs, I haven't seen stream in a long time. Watched Romario stream. He plays a lot of combo, but that's fine. I enjoy seeing different decks that I don't necessarily play myself.
Well, we're batting like 50% on podcast guests there, so I think we're doing pretty well.
not intentional.
That's great. I'm probably going to be playing Friday. I took Friday off in anticipation of
the 5 p.m. start time.
Yeah, exactly. I gotta, you know, warm up, remove those stops, be all prepared to start my first game and have my first turn fly by like it happened.
Yes. Egypt. Oh God.
That's called just desserts right there. And then I'm probably locked in for the Sunday as well. So I'm excited for that. We can get into what we'll be playing and stuff later, but the vintage one, I don't know if maybe like Elliot will fire up vintage or Edward. Remember, last year, Ed was just crushing. Nathan has recently been crushing on vintage. I think he took down the challenge the other day. So anyway, very exciting news. Now that your calendars have been marked, now you can slot in the times and tell your important people in your life that you're going to be away for that weekend, off in Dominaria, and have some fun.
I know when we talked about this before, and once it was announced it was going to be online, Elliot and I talked about doing like a LAN party, at least for like one of the days. Like, hey, just like come on over, we'll have some beers, we'll set up the computers. I'm still going to look into that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
That would be really sweet. Yeah. Nothing like removing all your stops and having everyone like cheering around you. Like, yeah.
Wait, you're going to have to discard to hand size,
Click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The next event I have on here, we went from Moto to legally not MTGO. This isn't Legacy related, but it's old cards related. They are running a Mercadia Masks block constructed tournament on Magic Online. This was supposed to happen last week, but I think there's some issues with decklist registrations, and they have it set as vintage. So if you're trying to play like Brainstorm and Gush, like it won't accept your decklist. So you have to put it in as like Crush and Brainstone. So they pushed the event to November 5th. To free entry, there's, I think the prize is like 100 tickets or something. Ports banned, Lin Civi is legal. So this is just going to be an absolute nightmare, and I can't wait. I have submitted my deck list already, which is a Rising Waters. I'm always a contrarian and trying to play a Winter Orb if I can. So I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a disaster, and I'm going to hate myself. But I don't know. Maybe I can get some people together and stream it or something.
So Jeremy, on a 1 being not excited and 10 being super excited, when you hear Mercadian Mass Block, like, where do you fall on that?
Well, I definitely was playing during that time, and I remember Port being everywhere, and Lin Civi being busted. I also remember playing against Rising Waters in extended PTQs, or maybe it wasn't extended, maybe it was standard, but you know, 4-mana Winter Orb is not as scary as 2-mana Winter Orb. And I don't even think Winter Orb is really that scary. It's just like a card that people forget and then get punished when they tap all their mana.
Yeah, I feel like there's some kind of like marker. So like if I say to you, you know, Mercadian Mass Block Constructed, like McVay was saying, how, like, are you excited? Like, are you going to, would you show up to an event given card availability, whatever, there's a paper event and it's Mask Block Constructed, you know, right in the middle of a Saturday, Mox Boarding House. Like, would you show up to this? All the cards are provided, any deck list you want.
I mean, if all the cards are provided, I probably would jam. But if I had to go out and buy a bunch of Mercadian Masks jank, I probably would not.
I feel like it's a good like litmus test for like people I know on if like this sounds appealing to them or not. Cause we were talking about this in the Slack, and I posted the tweet where they're talking about how, you know, due to the general awfulness of the format and the time of people submitting deck lists, like they're pushing it. And some people are reading that as them describing like, it's awful. Why are they running this tournament? And I'm reading that like, it's awful. Like, when are they running this tournament? Let's go. So, I mean, if you, like me, get tickled by things that sound absolutely terrible, you should join this.
So, one final point before moving on. Jeff, I did see your deck, submission, and I got lots of issues with it. I think it's not ideal at all, but I wish you all the best.
I can change it. I pulled out the hot tech out of some, like, 20-year-old articles.
I, as someone who also played, like, during standard during that time and couldn't afford all like the big expensive cards from Urza's block, I played Blue Skies. That was my deck. Like, I still have my Blue Skies deck from back then. I have a very personal deep appreciation for Blue Skies. So I could perhaps give you some pointers.
All right, we can talk. I can change this.
And I do remember an old Inquest magazine from way back in the day where there was a Mass Block Constructed tournament and the winning deck being a Rising Waters deck. So I was trying to find that list for you and like the actual magazine, but I was having issues.
Oh, that would be great. What has been a little upsetting is that looking at the submitted deck lists, and you know, I think there was like 25 people registered, and I think about half of them had submitted deck lists. It looked like maybe 60, 65% of them were playing Rising Waters. Like, everybody's kind of on the contrarian train, which is a little upsetting then, you know. I want to play something real janky, so maybe it'll change.
I think Thrashing Wumpus is your boy then. Ritual Thrashing Wumpus. Come at me. This okay, is like a, let's get off of this.
Such a big blind spot in Magic for me, because I like played way back in the day and then just like didn't play, and there's like no cards and masks that are relevant in Legacy really. Like, I know Brainstorm, Counterspell, Dark Ritual, Brainstorm, Dark Ritual, and Invigorate. Like, those are the four.
Unmask?
Oh yeah, is Unmask Mikarian Masks?
Yeah. Yep. Oh. And it's Masks block, right? Like it's, you can play Prophecy and Nemesis. Yep.
If you want to.
Oh, okay. Well then that brings up to four cards that I know in this in the block.
Well, you got Tanglewire, like there's some goodies.
Right. Last thing before we move on, if you are in Vancouver, Stronghold Weeklies are back in person. You need to be vaccinated and show proof. I guess next week, by the time you hear this, you'll need to be double vaccinated and wear a mask. 7 p.m. on Thursdays. Pre-reg on the Stronghold website. Now to the main attraction. Jeremy, again, thank you for joining us. We always like to get started when we have a guest on to just kind of like ask you what your Magic journey was like. Like, how'd you get started playing the game and how'd you get into Legacy?
Well, I started playing in 1995 and I was in seventh grade. It was probably spring and just saw some people playing at lunch and had to get in on that action because they were having a lot of fun. It was a really different game. I had collected sports cards and like Marvel Comics cards and stuff like that. I'd been into comic books, but nothing really like Magic before Magic. And so I managed to track down a place and my mom took my brother and I, and we got starter decks of Revised, which was set that was in stock at the time, and there actually was very little Magic in stock around the area. I grew up in Kent, Washington, which is about 20 minutes southeast of Seattle. And around that time, there were just extreme shortages of Magic products. There was a bookstore called Book World that kind of was the central base for these people have Magic product, thus all the Magic players descend on their store and loiter all around the clock enough where they actually got upset. But that was where I first saw the Dark expansion, and I saw they also had Legends there. I believe the packs of the Dark were $7 each. They marked them up, and I think Legends was 12 or 15, and I thought, that's so much to pay for a pack when you could just get a whole starter for $7.99.
I remember that too, going to the store and looking at the Legends packs and be like, I can never afford a Legend pack. They're like $15. And now being like, oh, if I bought every single pack of Legends.
Yeah, that's one of those things where if I'd been a little older, I probably would have bought a lot of the quote right stuff to buy, and I think it was a fun journey. I played from 95 to 2002-2003 when I went to my 4-year college, Western Washington University in Bellingham, and it just ran out of time to play. I was trying to also go down and play PTQs on the like intersession breaks or on weekends, and it just was not. I wasn't getting the good finishes that I wanted, so I didn't have any time to practice. So I decided to step away and sold a lot of stuff. One of the things I did was I sold the Zara Baghdads. I had a playset that I sold for $160. So
that is that each?
That is for the total.
I don't even think it matters really, Jeff. Like it's such an order of magnitude difference.
Yeah. But who knew? I mean, that was obviously a mistake in retrospect. That I was away from the game for about 6-7 years. I started playing Legacy in 2009, and the first deck I was going to play was a 10 land mono green stompy deck, just, you know, straight aggro. And
hell yes. Did you have rogue elephants?
Yeah, rogue elephants and
Bounty of the Hunt, Simian Spear Guide. Just
so much garbage that isn't playable now.
10 lands. Are you playing like a fair land grant?
Yeah, it was land grant. That was
but then you can pitch your land grant later to like a Vine Dryad or Bounty of the Hunt, Jeff. Like it's all part of the plan. Come on.
However, that's not the deck that I ended up playing in the first tournament that I played at. I found out there was a store relatively near where I was. I had just moved to Seattle and I was living in Fremont neighborhood where I'm still living now. And there was a store called First Pick Games on Stoneway in Wallingford, which is just right next door to Fremont. And I went down there and met Narayan Cook, who was the owner, the operator of the store at the time, and found him to be very welcoming. And he told me about a tournament. And I thought, yeah, cool. I would love to play in a tournament. And I showed up there a couple weeks later with Burn, which was a deck that I had played in the old extended, different variations of Burn and Sly. And I felt that that was a very proactive game that I had quite a bit of success with. So I was eager to get back in and do that. And the first event I played, I got the bye in round one. And I was so disappointed in that. I was so pumped up to play. And it was like, I waited 9 years to play a tournament and I have to wait another hour to play. And then round two, I played the mirror. So it was a fun event. And I kind of went on from there, you know, playing different decks. So I played Burn for a while and then I played Enchantress, which was another deck that I had played from the old extended days. And then I built, I think, Dredge next, or I toyed around with some stunt decks that weren't very good. There was one called the Nothing that had Bottomless Pit and Cursed Scroll and Ensnaring Bridge and just a main deck Planar Void and just Gallons of Removal. And it was just such a wacky deck that I played it in one event at Mirkwood, and I think I went 1-3 drop or something. It was what you generally get when you go super deep and you don't really know the format yet.
I will add that in pre-modern, apparently there's a Bottomless Pit scroll rack, like mono black pox deck. That sounds like a lot of what you're describing, maybe minus the Nether Voids.
I'm very intrigued by this, by the way.
Bottomless Pit's like 1BB, and is the beginning of your upkeep, each player discards a card at random? Or is it each player's upkeep?
I think it's each player's upkeep.
Oh, card's so sick.
But the random discard is definitely appealing to me. People get really uncomfortable with random effects, and they tend to tilt really hard when it hits their best card. We saw that a few years ago in Modern with the Burning Inquiry out of the Goblin Lore.
My god,
out of that deck, and it's just, you know, roll the die, you can have anything. You can have a terrible hand turn into a great hand, or you can have a hand that you were so happy to keep turn into nothing, but, you know, like, it can just take all your lands.
The amount of videos I saw, there's two sides. One side is somebody cast Burning Inquiry and they just have garbage in hand and they drew out like three hollow ones. And then the other side is somebody keeps a good hand, they're on the draw, and their opponent goes Burning Inquiry and they just discard all their lands and they lose the game.
Imagine seeing that in like one match where like it happens at the same time. You're like,
it's beautiful. Huh. Jeremy, I want to take it like a bit of a step back. Like, you took this break, you came back to Magic. Like, what drew you back in?
It's kind of weird. I actually had the flu and missed a lot of things that I was doing because it took me a long time to recover. And when I was recovering, I was really bored. And one of the things I did was I wondered what was going on with Magic. And I mean, when you're not playing the game, you can go through periods where, you know, you don't even think about it for like years. But for some reason I thought, oh, I wonder what is going on with Magic. And I happened to stumble upon MTG The Source. And I was scrolling through the forum and I was just taken aback at how similar the decks seemed. I was having to look up a lot of cards, but I just thought, this just reminds me so much of the old extended environment where I played in from, you know, 2000 to 2002, 2003, and really enjoyed. You know, there were so many strong cards in that format that are strong cards in Legacy today, like Force of Will and Swords to Plowshares, Wasteland. Obviously, there's some upgrades to like Jackal Pup, but.
Random question here. Was this the extended format where it was like the early extended, so the dual lands were still legal?
Correct. Yeah. And that's why it resonated with me, I think. And so once I discovered that, that started me getting, that got me into the headspace of what could I build in this format? And is anyone near where I'm living playing this format that I could join in games, or are there any tournaments? And when you're away from the game for so many years, it's kind of like, you know, you don't know any of that stuff. So.
Well, it sounds like you kept your dual lands, and that's the important part.
I did. Yeah, I did. I actually had a lot of stuff that I kept during that period. I had basically all the duels. I had Force of Wills. I had a Type 1 deck, which was Mono Black, Nether Voids, Abyss.
A brand.
And... what the heck was it? Nantuku Shades. That was like the last big addition I made to the deck before I stopped following Magic. Was I had a playset of Nantuku Shades, and I was like, this is such an upgrade to Frozen Shade. actually, it was a big upgrade to Looming Shade, which was previously the minor upgrade from I think Urza the Saga.
That's right, actually.
Shade technology really dropped off.
I can't believe they haven't printed like a free one that's a 0/1 or something.
I mean, next year.
Yeah.
Modern Horizons 3.
My favorite shade was always the beta copy of Frozen Shade that I had.
And definitely the coolest.
It didn't say until end of turn on it. So when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, I just keep putting mana in this and it just keeps getting bigger. And that's why.
Oh my God.
Man, even up until like revised doesn't say until end of turn. It's not until the fourth that it says till end of turn. That's crazy.
It's like an Omnath. Yeah.
That's going to be the new shade. It'll just not say end of turn. Everybody, this is a mistake. No, no, no. We meant to do this.
It's not good enough.
So I've got two questions on this. If you showed up to play a Legacy tournament and you kind of like started playing your deck and your opponent recognized what deck it was, what would be the deck where they're like, of course, like the classic Jeremy Edwards deck, like of course you're playing this? What is that deck?
Today I think I've been playing since 2009. So I've played so many decks. It's kind of people who know me from different eras would not really, they might put me on a different deck. I think Enchantress is probably the one in general that that crosses more eras, but I've definitely played most things, and I've had some pretty long runs with different decks. So I played Survival when that was a thing, before it was banned, and also before it was considered good. So I played Burn for quite a long stretch. I continued to go back to that and change things up in different environments. There was a tournament at West Coast Cards and Games in Federal Way that was extremely juicy. Dan Nguyen actually won the tournament with Elves, and I played him in the finals. And we were playing for, it was originally advertised to be a playset of Underground Seas and Trops. But actually the Trops were at first place and the Seas were second place because they were actually more expensive at that time. That's kind of a cool moment in time because Tarmogoyf was so omnipresent that Tropical Islands were briefly worth more than Underground Seas.
Dan's been playing, whenever you say Dan's name, I would think of Elves. Like, that's a quintessential deck for him. If I had to guess for you, I would have guessed Enchantress. But again, I've only known you for the last few years.
I looked this up too. Jeremy, I know he plays some other stuff from like mostly Enchantress. I played against him mostly Enchantress. And I checked my like sheet. And apparently, at least recorded, I've only played against you three times. And it was like Tin Fins, Bug Delver and Enchantress, and I was like, I thought this is more, you know, cohesive and consistent, but nope, there's must be just the imposing presence on Enchantress.
We've definitely played more times than that. I think maybe when maybe in the last 3 years, when did you start keeping track?
I think early 2018. But so we definitely 2017 played. Actually, but they were probably just so demoralizing that I couldn't even enter them.
Well, we played a whole bunch of different matches. Most of them were Enchantress versus Death and Taxes. And I definitely had some fun memories, like the hard casting Emrakul on turn 5. And playing Sabo's Web after you tapped out with turn 1 Caracas, turn 2 Rishadenport, and you tapped out for like Aether Sworn Canonist or Thalia, and I just was like, slam this card, Sabo's Web, and you had, I think, one planes for the rest of the match.
I'm just reliving all of these emotions right now.
Sabo's Web is a beautiful card.
McBain's got me with that a few times back in the day too.
It's a nasty one. People don't and it draws a card. Just
that's the thing.
They stuck that on there. Even back in the day, it was like, this card is good, but we could make it better.
It's like 1999 fire policy.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, what if Blood Moon drew a card?
Well, they Blood Sun, they did.
There'd be Blood Sun
next time around.
So I'm curious what you're playing right now. Did you go to Legacy last night?
I did, yeah. And actually my car wouldn't start when I was leaving, so that was kind of a longer night. Fortunately, my brother came to the rescue. He lives kind of 20 minutes away. He drove out and helped me figure out what was the issue. I just had an issue with my steering was locked and my key was locked and just like everything was not working. It's kind of an older car, so I was like, well, maybe this is the day that it's died. Stuff doesn't last forever, so.
Does that like impact your deck choice? Like you're planning on playing something really intricate and technical on the way out the door and then your car's giving you trouble and you're just like, I'm getting Tin Fins?
No, I usually pre-plan stuff. I've been vacillating between several decks. The one I played last night was the Hull Breacher Narset Echo deck that my friend Matt termed Wheel Stompy. And I really like that name. Because you're just a stompy deck that plays wheels.
I definitely got ranched by that yesterday when I played my first league with lands in a long, long time online. And I actually just let my opponent go off one turn. I was like, I'm so dead. Like, whatever, it's fine. And I think they cast like three wheel effects because of all the treasure tokens they get off Hull Breacher. They have all this mana, so they can just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah,
at least I like online, you can just F6 and it just happens. In paper, you're like, I guess I'll shuffle again.
Yeah, I like to say that they don't give us mind twists, so this is like the way that you make your own mind twist.
Quinn actually has something to say on that as well.
I was gonna say there's a couple ways to do it. Leyline of the Voided. Well, revealed Leyline, and then turn to Ill-Gotten Gains, which is slightly older tech, I think. Echo Nurse is probably a little better.
Iggy Pop was the name that they called that Storm deck back in whatever that was, 2008, 2009, when it was more popular, and I played that in an event. It was a fun deck. It's another Storm engine, so I think today it's just outclassed, but you certainly can bring it back in periods where the graveyard is a really popular playground, and you can just close that playground up with your ley line. And
yeah, I can confirm that it's worse in 2021 right now.
It is fun when you just open with ley line and then get to take away their hand with Ill-Gotten Gains.
It's also fun, the Miser's games. You just like game one, put in Leyline, and your opponent just goes, like concedes.
Right. You got paired against Hogak, and they're like,
And they're just like, I guess I just pitched this Murktide to Force of Will or something.
Yeah.
Or if I ever cast it, it will be really, really big. One of the two. So, Jeremy, you've probably heard on the housekeeping over the last year, but Puget Sound Battleground 3 was an event that we announced ad nauseum for a long time and talked about how we were going to go and then how we couldn't go and then how the border was closed and then how it might be open and then how it was ultimately closed. But you, my friend, were on the right side of the border for this event and you attended?
I did.
Can you tell us a little bit, maybe set the table, just like a little bit about the event and then a little bit about how... You don't need like an entire play-by-play or anything like that, but just like some of the great moments that you had. Or
sure. So Puget Sound Battleground, this is the third in the series, and Dylan Jupp of Geek Fortress organized this tournament. It's a really large event, kind of like a smaller scale Grand Prix would be, or Magic Fest, if you prefer that term.
I prefer like West Coast Eternal Weekend.
That works too. And there's a whole bunch of different events. Legacy was one of the main events, but there was also a big modern event, an old school 93-94 event, a team trios tournament, and a bunch of side events, a Canadian Highlander event. And it's cool to be able to have so many people be able to come out to a big event and see artists, buy stuff from them, get cards signed, visit dealers, play a bunch of high stakes, high level Magic. It's definitely something that we all missed in 2020 and most of this year. It's tough to get to big events nowadays. So I played Blue Red Delver, which was not the first choice that I had for the event. I actually was thinking that I was going to play Curses because I wanted a proactive deck and something that would be quick to win or lose, because I knew it was going to be a long day. And I was thinking, this is going to be the first event I've ever played in a mask the whole time. For me, that's kind of a personal challenge, because I don't get the same, I guess, quality of oxygen in a mask. So it's fatiguing for me. And a long tournament is already fatiguing for me. So I was looking to play something that was going to get me in and get me out. But when I tested for curses, it just wasn't. It was, sometimes the deck just tells you, you know, this is not going to work out. And I just had to admit that, yeah, this is just probably not the deck that I should play, even though it's the deck that I would like to play. And I have a ton of experience with Blue-Red Delver, so I played that instead. I just was on more of a, I guess you would call it a budget list. I had no Ragavans. I have never been in this situation before of, you know, this must play $100 mythic thing. I don't like it. I could have picked up Ragavans, but I just feel that they're going to get banned, and I didn't want to dump that on Ragavans and then just have them be banned. So I went ahead and built the deck with Ragavan in mind. I played more main deck removal. I have 7 main deck removal spells in the list I played. I played a playset of Lightning Bolts and 3 Unholy Heat. And when you're playing to beat Ragavan, you always want instant speed interaction, not sorcery speed interaction. So that's one of the reasons why Chain Lightning was not really an option on the table. And I think overall, the event went pretty well. I ended up getting a game loss in my second round, where it was just a bad time with the facilities, where we just had too much demand for one bathroom facility. And so there was a wait, and I got the tardy penalty for that, which was a match loss. It was a match loss. So the IPG says that you have 10 minutes basically. And, you know, if you're in a situation where you're not able to get in and out in 10 minutes, then they want to make sure the tournament is not taking unduly long when you have, you know, 100 people or around 100 people in an event. Or if you're in Eternal Weekend, maybe it's, I don't know, 200 people or something. So
that's really shitty, no pun intended. Like, that's picking up match losses for totally unnecessary things is like the top of the feel bads.
Especially at, like, you know, the big Return to Paper Magic event.
Like, it's almost like getting a buy round one when you're playing Burn in 2009, but like maybe a notch below that. That's unfortunate. I'm sorry to hear that happened.
Yeah, I mean, it just is what it is. I'll give Dylan some suggestions next time on maybe some ways that we could expand capacity. One of the ideas I had thought about was maybe there would be a way to have gender neutral restrooms, because then we could basically annex the women's room, which, I mean, if you have an event that has 500 people or 600 people, you basically just get to double your capacity if you have gender neutral restrooms, because you're not funneling 95% of your population to one bathroom. So that was, I think, probably the most promising. I don't know if it's actually going to be a feasible idea or something that a convention center or arena would be on board for, but I thought that's probably something that could help. My other matches were pretty interactive. I played against the blue, white, red Delver lists a lot. There were two of those that were both playing Sagas instead of Wastelands. And I had a Price of Progress in my main deck and a Price in my board. And they both were...
Main?
Ooh, yeah,
baby.
They both, well, they both were extremely timely for the way that people had chose to build their decks for this event. The way that the room sort of shaped up was blue-red Delver, blue-white-red Delverless, and the four-color, three-color control decks with Uro. And so the control decks are kind of trying to go bigger than each other because you have Bant control, and then you had the four-color pile that Anurag was playing that, not in the event, but that he was popularizing online that played Expressive Iterations. And
those mana bases are getting really greedy. So
they, the thing is they keep going because they go up to, you know, playing Life from the Loam, and then they want to have Field of the Dead for the mirror. So
I think that's a very astute call on your part. Yeah, playing those prices.
There were so many non-basics there that I probably would have done even better if I played three than two, but certainly in some matchups, they just aren't that good. So
you gotta have those sideboard Sabo's webs as well.
I did also play on the other end of the spectrum. I played against the mono blue player. So he had somewhat of an interesting Dreadnought Delver deck that was just straight mono blue. I assume there was back to basics probably in the deck. He also had a lot of new high powered stuff like Murktide Regent, but also older stuff. Like he also had Ethereal Forger in the deck and Mystic Dispute and main deck gut shot for some removal, Dismember and Dress Down.
This sounds pretty spicy.
Mystical Dispute's a real meta call.
Yeah. I was gonna say, it's nice to see your other like blue plus delve 3/3 show up.
Yeah, people forget about the whale. It really just wasn't around in Legacy for very long before it just got completely outclassed.
Who needs more spells if you have an 8/8?
Murktide sort of tips too far in one way, and like the whale's cool. You know, it's got to survive. It can be bolted, but if it lives, it gets you back a spell. And it's like a little snowball-y, but not like a Dreadhorde snowball.
You know? Right. It's like contextual on what you had already. And like, yeah, you have to pay for the stuff. Like it goes to your hand. Yeah, it's cool.
It's in that like Dragon Range Channeler land for me where I'm like, ah, this is interesting.
It also has like a limited scope on what it can get back because you have to do it when you delve it, not like you put it into play and then it just does everything ever. Or a whale appreciation podcast.
The Murktide drawing Murktide Dream, which Jeremy, I think you mentioned in your tournament report. That's just like the thing where it's like, oh wow, why they really like that when the second one grows the first one, it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's something that doesn't actually happen that often because usually you either kill them with the first Murktide or they answer it immediately. Yeah. And then you have to find another one. So to have them both be in play, usually you're only going to do that in a longer game and you'll cast one turn and then the next turn you'll just cast the second one and yeah, then attack with the first one that's not summoning sick.
And that's really scary too, like trying to do the combat math of like, okay, they can only crack back for so much and then they just go and exile all their cards again with another Murktide and grow the first one.
Yeah, it's most dangerous if you're playing a mirror or semi-mirror situation where you both have Murktides and you think that yours is just going to be the bigger one, because that's usually it's usually what wins if the other person doesn't have a removal, because the other person is going to lose the race or have to try to double block or something, and that usually leads to a blowout.
The whole there's always a bigger fish argument. So what did the, I know the standings haven't really been posted or anything yet, but do you know what the decks that were in the top eight were?
Yeah. I was talking with Bill Lee, who won the event. He won with Yorion, Death and Taxes, and he was kind enough to pass on the top eight to me. I knew some of it, I left before the top eight, but I had seen some of who was at the top table and in round five and six, and talked with people who were either going to be drawing in or were playing for it. So Bill won the event with Yorion, Death and Taxes, and he was kind of not too high on Yorion in the past. So it was interesting that he chose that for the event. I know that he was saying that he was expecting to play against Delver a lot and play against matchups where Yorion would be good. And it definitely was good for him on the day. He beat Aiden Garabrecht in the finals, and Aiden was playing blue, white, red Delverless. And then the semifinals for Tommy, who I believe this is the Tommy I played in round two. He's from Yakima, and he was playing a four color Uro list with no red and Loam in the main.
Just need to point out for the geography fans out there, that's on the other side of the Coastal Mountains. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yakima is on the other side of the Cascades.
Okay. Thank you. I just need to make sure we have that clear.
Kyle Chandler was on blue, white, red, Delverless. He was one of the people I did not know was in the top eight. So, if for some reason Bill was mistaken, then don't get angry at Bill or me. We're just trying to give information when there's not official information posted. I checked MTG Top 8 and, you know, the tournament's not posted there. So it either wasn't submitted, or maybe it's was submitted but is going to take a lot longer to post. I don't know how quickly they post these days, although there aren't that many events getting submitted because there aren't that many events being run around the world yet.
I did follow up with Dylan before this, trying to get some info, and he was going to get me deck photos for the top eight, but just ran out of time. He said he's really busy right now, so.
Yeah, I would totally expect that too. So, you know, not throwing any shade. So five through eight, we had Caleb on, it was an Echo Psy list, very similar to the one that Bob Wong was playing in the Legacy Pit Open.
Is the Affinity one?
Yeah, with Emrys and a gazillion baubles. And Robin Hartshorn was in with Green White Depths, and he's been playing that deck a fair bit recently, probably the last several months. Matt Green just was smashing through the Swiss early on. He was playing Sneak and Show. And I saw, I think it was the end of round five, where it looked like he was playing Tommy and he had Magus of the Moon out. So, and I think Tommy had a Containment Priest, and they just had this stare down each other. Don't want to give up the card that's prisoning out their opponent, but can't really proceed with the board as it is. I think they drew on that game three, but and then Bill said Andrew, he thinks it was Lance. I don't actually know who was the in that eighth slot, but probably Lance. There were a number of Lance players I saw looking through the room in the early rounds. So that deck made a showing. I think primarily it was blue-red Delver and the blue-white-red, either the Delverless version where it's just a bunch of Modern Horizons 2 cards, prismatic endings, and plows in either an aggressive shell or more of a mid-range shell. And then different Uro variations, you know, Bant control or
non-black control.
Yeah, and there's also like ones that were playing black, like Tommy's, with no red. So people kind of decided that they couldn't play all of the colors. So
it almost feels like Astrolabes here. Almost.
It did, yeah, a little bit.
Except you're resolving Price of Progress, which is
well,
what yeah. is that's as Richard intended right there. So I think we're still happy.
I think the most that I did in with one was 10, but it always feels very powerful when you can just instant speed cut your opponent's life total in half or more.
Well, it sounds like an awesome event. Again, I'm super bummed I wasn't able to go. There's even like that pre-modern event that they had the following day there, and then like getting to go out and stuff. It really sad. And I think Dylan did mention when I was trying to get the list off of him that they were planning on running another event, a Puget Sound Battleground 4. It sounded like in the summertime sometime. Something like that, but
yeah, that would make sense based on how they did the other ones. Just in terms of, I don't know, maybe being a 9-month window between the planning and the event itself, and hopefully 9 months from now we can all go, wow, you know, things are so much closer to normal.
You can say, wow, the border's open.
Yeah, I was so bummed that you guys couldn't make it down. I even brought my revised 40 stuff that you guys were the first ones to tell me about that format, and I built some decks and
oh yes,
thought, well, if they can get over the border and maybe they'll show up and we can jam some games.
I don't know if you want to play Jeff's revised 40 deck.
I will play against any revised 40 deck.
That'll be a format at the next Canthresh Invitational.
Is this the Circle of Protections deck?
Oh yeah.
Okay, yeah. I got several decks that I'm ready and waiting for that.
Oh, I can't wait to play Revise 40 again. I've got my deck right here.
Jeff, what are you gonna do about Millstone? How many disenchants do you play?
You know, I got my own Millstones.
All right, it's on.
I did stop a bad guy with the Millstone.
It's only 40 cards. Those cards go quick.
Yeah, I saw a deck that was like Millstones, Wall of Woods, Fogs, and that was it.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. It looked pretty amazing. I think there might have been like a one stream of life or something in there, but it was very much on the Millstone plan.
Hmm. Yeah, I almost think that format is more for, it's almost more for deck building ideas than it is for gameplay itself. But it is fun when you're going into play different games and you don't know what the other person's going to show up with and to see how that ends up.
Yeah, I really like the one-ofs in the format that you can just have in your tech. And like, you know, you have a pretty good chance of trying it in the course of a long drawn out game. And they can be extra spicy. So I've definitely had like my fair share of like death laces on things.
Ooh, my goodness.
Yeah. Anyway, did either of you have any more legacy questions, or I wanted to jump into the other non-revised 40 side conversation?
No, I'm down for this. I'm excited for this one. I was going to say it's a perfect lead-in because revised 40, in my mind, excels when you just finish your legacy match and you're waiting for, you know, 10, 15 minutes for somebody else to finish. And you just, hey, you want to play some revised 40? And you just jam some games back to back to back. And from reading your email, Jeremy, it seems like that's what you built this other thing up to do.
Yeah. So I had first heard about this through a Channel Fireball article that was referencing Brian DeMar's from 2013 or 2014. And it was talking about Danger Room, which was renamed BattleBox. And they were kind of explaining the premise of it, which in many ways plays out in the same way, like the rule structure for like Hearthstone is, where you get like another resource every time. But I immediately saw it and said, this was incredible. I just copy pasted, built the whole thing, and I've been playing it. And it's some of the best Magic ever, but I know that you're secretly a BattleBox master. So can you tell us a little bit about what BattleBox is and what you do with them?
Sure. With BattleBox, you start with 10 lands in exile for each player. And typically you'll have a tapped dual land combination with basic lands as your other option. So on each turn, you could play, say, a Salt Marsh, or you could play a basic forest. So you're choosing between the tapped land that could produce two colors, or the untapped land that could produce one color. It's basically a gold colored format where you could have a hand that requires multiple colors to play a card. Like if you have Spirit Monger, it's going to cost you black and green. So it makes you really consider ahead of time which lands you play. And the power level is, I guess it can be whatever you want to make it. Typically, it's a lower powered format, closer to draft, and it lets you play with a very wide range of cards. And someone was saying it feels like Cube, where you just skip the draft and start with the deck. And so you're like if you showed up to the draft late and somebody drafted the deck for you and then gave you the deck, that kind of discovery where you're like, oh wow, that's cool, that's in here.
That's a really fun part of it. The one that I had made was just the Ben Stark one that he had put together in 2014, and I've never changed a card in it. I only recently, last month, changed the sleeves on it. They were getting really ranched, but it's like whenever I introduce people to it, I just shorthand, I say, try to 2-for-1 on everything. Like as long as you're trying to get value or some kind of weird card advantage out of something, and you just keep doing that over and over and over again, you're going to pull ahead and you'll win the game. But there's also like avenues of tempo and all sorts of things in it, but it's like, you can build them. So it's like, if you were trapped in a desert island, it's like, well, at least I got my battle box and I can play that for infinity and play Magic and it'll be great.
Yeah. I would say that with my box, it's probably whoever is most efficient in playing in tapping their mana, whoever makes zero mistakes in tapping their mana is more likely to win. And it's hard to project those things because you don't necessarily know what your opponent's going to do on your next turn. But you can plan ahead based on what's currently in your hand. So the easiest way to lose a game is just carelessly tapping your mana. You always want to make sure that you are either able to play spells or able to represent spells that you might have that the other person has to respect, like Sensor or Force Spike or a removal spell. Probably if you're holding up Swamp, I'm going to think that you might have a Terror or something. So,
yeah, there's the people who initially get into it, play a game or two, they definitely get punished by the mana very quickly. And there's turns where they're like, I wish I could take this back and like do it properly.
Yeah.
But it really makes them focus. And like typically each turn starts with the player kind of like reanalyzing their hand and like really sequencing out their mana. And they're like, okay, I will now select this land to play from the command zone. And then I will now do this. Like it's, you don't just kind of like, your deck is all just like green and red cards and off you go. And there's not really too much to it. You have to be very deliberate with your mana.
And another difference is the starting hand size is lower because typically you're just playing lands during the first at least two or three turns of the game. So I don't know what you start at with your box. I usually start at five cards for the starting hand. And I've also played variations where if you have less time, you could say, okay, we're going to play two lands each turn. Everybody just has like free exploration effect on the table. And if you only have 5 minutes to play a game, you can actually play a game in 5 minutes if you are both able to play two lands.
I guess you could like tune the power level too. Like Jeremy, when you were emailing us, you know, you talked about like I'm trying to speed it up a bit so it's more friendly for play between Legacy. Is it like McBain, like you were saying, like, you know, it's your cube or your battle box story is like very much like, yeah, play for two for ones and it's slow and grindy.
You need a lot more than 5 minutes to finish a game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It can go an hour, I mean, like easily.
Presumably if you find cards where the power level is relatively flat, like you could kind of like amp it up, you know, within reason to whatever you want, or amp it down, you know?
Yeah. My box originally was a lot slower and there was a pivotal decision where I was playing after a modern tournament at the Mox Ballard store with Chris Cornejo. And he played a Ancestors Chosen and he gained 18 life. And It was a situation where he was dead on the next turn. And so it's like, okay, you've gained basically your entire life total back. And it's generally hard to do a lot of damage in this format. You lose life in, you know, chip here and there. There isn't like Urza's Rage or something that can just chunk you out. So we were playing another 20 minutes and I was again about to finish him off. Ancestors Chosen was in the graveyard and he plays Animate Dead on Ancestors Chosen. Gains 28 life. And I'm like, all right, the Ancestors Chosen is coming out of the box because this is ridiculous. And we ended up playing almost 2 hours. It was such a long game. And I thought, man, I was just going to jam this fun game with Chris before I left. And it's like, you know, we kind of got locked in of, okay, one of, you know, we both want to win this game. We also both want to finish this game. But neither of us just wants to concede and say, okay, you know, I'm done with this. We want there to actually be a real honest conclusion to it. So
the Ben Stark battle box that I have has, what's that 013 tree of redemption?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got Tree of Redemption in there, has like a pseudo life gain thing. And I've definitely had games where my brother and I always play it over the holidays. And he always beats me with it, but he was capsizing his Tree of Redemption to kind of like stabilize at a certain life total all the time.
That every other turn go to 13. That's
so how do you play capsize in that? Because it can target your lands. Do you have it just errated where you can't target lands, or does it put the lands back in the command zone?
The coward's capsize.
It would just return it back to your hand is how we would play it. But
okay, because with my box, that's one of the rules, primary rules, is nothing in it, nothing interacts with lands in a way that it takes them away or turns them off or destroys them, because that's too much of an advantage. You could certainly play around with that. But none of the cards in my box reference lands or being able to sacrifice any permanents, because if a land was targeted, it would just be too crippling.
Yeah, conceivably you could like bounce someone's land and make him discard. And then you have this like that mana advantage is actually meaningful.
Yeah. You know, that's never come up again because I just literally picked it off the shelf and copy and pasted it. I never put any like analysis into it. Like I was along for the adventure of like, oh, this card's in here, this card's in here. And I didn't know about this interaction. So that hasn't come up yet, but you could conceivably capsize a land and then like make him discard a card. That would be interesting.
That would feel like a broken game moment.
Well, no, you know, like if you've gotten to the point where that's what's happening, like at that point you have no cards in hand, maximum lands in play. You're kind of in that end game already. So, you know, that's a cool win con. It's like how
those size of buyback takes a lot to do in Battlebox.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be one of your, you know, it's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to be able to do that and have that be the end game, then that's kind of a quirky way to take somebody out. It's just take away their mana.
So
I think thinking about that thought, McBain, where you were like, I saw this article, I just built this thing and haven't touched it. And I mean, I can say it's worked for us, you know, like our friend group for sure. But Jeremy, thinking, how about you? You've been more deliberate about it. If someone out there is like, I like this idea, I want to build a battle box, where would you suggest they start?
I think, probably the most important thing is just to choose cards that you generally like, and to also always strive for balance in power level. So if your favorite card is something like Gristlebrand, that's not going to play well at all in a box because there aren't a lot of cards of similar power level like Gristlebrand. But anything of a lower power level, you know, if you played draft before, a lot of your favorite draft commons could be something that you incorporate into the box. And I really started with just random stuff I had lying around. I had a bunch of commons that I may have picked up over the years for different reasons and just never really found a use for them. And, you know, might have been on the verge of getting rid of them and just said, oh, no, I can do something with these cards. And I think anybody who plays Popper, there's a lot of Popper cards that go really well in a box. One of the things that you want to have is to give players a lot of decision points. And so one of the best ways you can do that is by having lots of cards that loot, things that exchange cards for other cards, and also cards that you can cycle if they aren't immediately useful. So anything that interacts with cards that aren't very prevalent, like artifacts and enchantments are not usually the top tier. It's usually creatures on removal primarily. And so if you have a more conditional card, like, I guess, what is this? Druid's Descent or Druid's Deliverance is the one
Dissenter's Deliverance?
Dissenter's Deliverance, yeah, the one that has cycling. Like, that just is a good card to have because if you can't use it in time being and you want to exchange it, you just pay green and cycle it. I think cycling is one of the best mechanics for the box. And aside from that, just being able to give players' decisions is important and to work out the balance so that it's not just like all the removal spells are black. Like if you're too pigeonholed with one color doing one thing, then that takes some of the excitement and the wondering out of it because you'll just always know, okay, they have black up, there's removal, or they have blue up, they have counter spells. I like being able to do things that aren't traditionally in other colors, or that, you know, things that have flash that you wouldn't think that have flash, so that there's mental games that you can play based on what mana is up.
I can't wait to play this next time we're down. You got to bring it whenever we get to come, because that sounds great.
Yeah, I actually just added 50 new cards to the big old box. It's now actually in two boxes. My battle box doesn't fit in a single box anymore, so it's in two long boxes, and I just grab a chunk out of the box and mix it up with the other chunk in the other box, and then take it to a weekly and play it usually before the tournament. And if I have 20 minutes or something in a round, I'll find somebody to jam a game, and sometimes after the tournament too. So some of the cards that I added for this Longbow Archer, Quirion Druid, Woolly Thoktar, Fledgling Dragon, Nimble Bongoose, and some newer cards like Consider. Those are just really interesting. It's cool to give cards a home where they don't normally have a home, or maybe they used to have a home. Like Nimble Mongoose was a Legacy perennial, and now it just, like, it's been so many years since it's been relevant. It's nice to draw the Mongoose and go, oh yeah, it's good in this format.
Our poor friend.
I also love Longbow Archer. Does not have reach, but it can block Creature of the Flying.
Yeah, that's the I think it's before the reach keyword, right?
Yeah, it has a first strike, so it has a keyword on it, but not reach.
Yeah, that was a later, I mean, I guess it's still an early keyword, but later than first strike, obviously. I also like the Landwalk cards, because you're playing a format where you're going to likely have lands in play, but if your opponent knows that you have Landwalk cards, then you can say, oh, well, maybe I won't play my mountain. Maybe I'll play one of my tap duels that don't have a mountain type because they have a mountain yeti.
I miss Landwalk being relevant too. I remember, like, playing as a kid and just being like, this is so unfair.
Right. It used to be
it's like a 1/1, but you're like, it just has Forest Walk. How do I stop it? I can't not play Tropical Island.
Yeah. They put Regenerate on their Shannon and Dryad, and I just died. I couldn't kill it.
Yeah, I do think Regenerate on I don't have River Boa, because I do think I don't want it to turn into a situation like Bogles, where it's like, okay, just suit up my Landwalk guy, and it's effectively unblockable and now basically unkillable because of the redeem rate. So
the Stark Battle Box does have River Boa in it. It also has the that legendary thing that gives snakes the Ophidian effect.
Oh yeah.
Battle Box is definitely higher power level than mine.
Yeah.
But I think it's a fine place to start. If people just, don't want to consider all the implications themselves and just want to, like, pick up a list and just run with it, I think that's a fine place to start.
Yeah, I think to really solidify it, Jeremy, I was trying to think of, like, a philosophy that you could use when you're designing your battle box. And, like, if you use something that's, like, cards that are fun, inviting, replayable, and exciting, I think that would be like a really good spot to build your battle box around. And, like, as long as you get that balance right, it'll be really great. But just make sure that, like, again, like you said, all the cards are kind of equal playing, and you don't, like, totally power creep some of your favorite cards. So
right.
Sounds like you've got a good balance, though. That's good.
Yeah, I think one of the ways you could probably avoid those pitfalls, if you look at the formats banned lists, and maybe just err on the side of avoiding those cards.
I do want to say, as we've been talking, I was like, I wonder if you could build an old school battle box. And Brian DeMars has an article on Channel Fireball where everyone starts with the 10 dual lands as their, like, command zone lands.
Oh baby.
But it's a quite a flat power level. The splashy cards are the Elder Dragons, which reasonably, I mean, they cost 7 mana. But a lot of, like, this is, like, even as someone who plays a little bit of old school, I'm like, okay, but these cards you can't play, you know.
You can force basically anything. It's just a matter of the environment that you create. If it's a situation where you can make Nicol Bolas a total house, then it's I don't know, it's likely that that's the only thing that you can do.
Yeah, like these have, like, you know, all my old friends like Air Elemental and Banshee.
Oh, Banshee.
Sisters of Flame. I don't know if it remembers that one.
Yep, makes mana for some reason.
One red mana dork. I don't think I printed many of those.
Yeah.
Anyways, now, my pledge is next time we come down, I might have a few proxies, but I'll have this. We'll have many battle boxes, and this will be one of them.
Well, that sounds good. I'm always interested in playing battle box, and one of my friends and former playtesting partners, Mike Soroka, and I used to play battle box, and I used to test his battle boxes, and he used to build numerous ones, and we would figure out which cards were too good. So if you're playing Fires of Yavimaya, take it out of your box. It's too good.
I'm pretty sure McBain, that's in your box, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
Haste is a very powerful effect.
This one has a definitely lower power level. You can play a Riven Turnbull, though, if you want a 7 mana Elves of the Deep Shadow.
All right, I think we could go forever on Battlebox here. Do you guys want to move to the last section of this show?
Let's do it.
Yep, I'm ready.
Oof. All right, well, in the list, Jeremy, you're first, but Quinn, why don't you introduce the segment for us?
I thought you were going to do the intro again. I thought you were going to double intro.
That's corporate policy says that you do it, so.
Right. I feel like we've kept it pretty positive, this podcast, but we're going to continue to keep it positive with a segment we like to call That's Gas, where we just like to recognize someone, sometimes something that we think is great, deserving recognition, that is gas. Jeremy, if you're ready, and feel free, like, you know, if we're in a restaurant, if you want to defer, let Make Everyone Else go first, you also have that right. But if you're ready, as our guest, if you want to go first, by all means.
I mean, you guys, are, of course, are gas. I'm amazed. I was listening to you guys before the pandemic. And when the pandemic happened, I thought, I was actually pretty concerned that you guys would not be able to do a cast, because I was like, what's there to talk about? But you managed to not only survive but thrive in, you know, an environment where you had no paper events to talk about. Jeff's housekeeping was just like a barren nothing for so long, and you guys managed to always be fun and entertaining. And I laughed a lot with the intro songs, and I appreciate that you guys were able to make that work. I think it's a good cast, and you guys are the reason for that.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it means a lot when anyone says anything positive, you know, but it means a lot, you know, especially coming from you as a someone I see as a real legacy stalwart, you know, in the Pacific Northwest. So thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, I should probably also shout Jack, who was also on your podcast, because he's the one who told me that you guys had a podcast. So,
and Jack, who sang a song, and Jeremy, you were the only other person who is outside of this core group of three who have contributed lyrics to keep us going, which the thing that's become the most difficult part of doing the podcast every week is, oh shit, we need a song. We really priced ourselves into this. So also much love for that, well before, you know, you joined us in person.
No, you're welcome.
Well, Quinn, that's just the price of progress, you know.
It is. who knew that I played so many dual lands in my regular life? Jeff, who you got?
I wanted to shout out, I mean, Sony has a pretty good following already. So I've been swamped with a lot of work lately, and a lot of it has been work, thankfully, which I've been able to have like headphones on and have another monitor up. And I've been watching a lot of Modern on Twitch. I know, thumbs down, boo, boo. The format looks okay right now. I haven't played it myself, but you know, it's good enough to watch. And I've been watching Aspiring Spike on Twitch, and he tends to stream pretty early mornings, which is great for working and having this on. And honestly, it's become a good part of my morning routine when I'm working on stuff, just watching him mostly just cast Solitudes. But no, it's definitely gas. And if you haven't seen it, or you know, you're kind of questioning the Modern format right now, it seems like it's in a good spot to take a look. I know a bunch of people in the Slack have moved over, not moved over, but you know, started playing some.
I think as Legacy becomes less about the stack and they print cards like Force of Negation into Modern,
mm-hmm.
It certainly becomes more enticing. I'm like, I'm a one format in paper guy, so, but I mean, I get the appeal for sure. And certainly, like you said, it's entertaining to watch.
Yep,
for sure.
Yeah, I at this point am definitely still a one format in paper person. I even looked at like renting something today because I was like, oh, like surely I own most of the cards for like Hammer Time, and then it's like, oh, Mishra's Bauble is like 40 tickets, Solitude's up to 70 tickets. Like it's crazy, man.
Woof. These are not your problems, Jeremy. One, it's Modern, and two, it's online.
I actually enjoy Modern, so. I still have a Modern paper deck, and I also have Modern Enchantress waiting for someday when a certain one mana green card is printed.
Could be anything.
Some of the Modern lists do look insane. Like the Jund list that's just like all the banned cards from Legacy just all hanging out in one deck just looks ridiculous.
Three colors and Urza Saga.
Yeah. So it does look enticing and stuff like that, but it's going to take me quite a bit to unseat from Legacy.
If I had Stoneforges, I would probably Hammer Time. I don't want to buy Stoneforges.
Is that as close as you can get to Infect in
No, there's Infect. Wow.
That's big.
It's not like the Burning Vengeance or whatever. No, Burning, what was the pitch spell?
Oh, you get to play like, at Shoal. Times you got to play some like Wild Burning Defiance.
Shoal. Burning Shoal. Well, no, like the first or whatever. First, was it the first Modern tournament?
Yeah, Blazing Shoal.
Yeah, Blazing Shoal.
That's a
different thing. But yeah. I mean, I've cast a Might of Old Krosa. I've done Legacy. I have no shame. I would do it in Modern for sure.
Well, I guess that kind of works nicely into my shout out. So I'd like to. I think we may have done this already, but Fenris Cloud or Sam. I don't know Sam's last name. Quinn, maybe you can help me out here.
Dams.
Sam Dams. He's really trying to take on a bit of a challenge right now and get some people together for one of the Legacy Challenge events to, I guess, just, you know, celebrate the format. And, it's great. I love it when people kind of like take on a community action like that. So all the power to Sam and good luck. And I look forward to the challenge results.
Sam, I believe, if I recall correctly, going to be a father soon too. So congratulations to him.
Oh, way to go.
To keep it a bit on the Infect train, and also my that's gas. I think feel like it should be a package deal, but I picked Josh Kotis specifically. Of all the guys from where are they located? Geography Podcast is McBain.
Close
enough to drive to Stronghold, but like out in the burbs.
The suburbs.
I'm picking Josh because I know he's an Infect guy like I am. It's a downtime for us, one with like the negative stigma around COVID, and two with Plague Engineer. He brought Depths last week, but it was just good to see him. I brought Infect last week and I just saw his eyes light up when he went like, oh, is that Invigorate? And I was like, buddy, you know it is. But I think to also tie back to Jeremy, what you said about, like, you know, just paper magic's different, and in my opinion, it's much better. And it's just nice to be able to be back, be in our LGS and see people like Josh on a semi-regular basis, you know, guys who maybe I don't have like a kind of personal relationship with, but like someone I would consider a friend, just because you show up at the store and you see someone, you know, and realize how much that meant to me, I think, until COVID happened. And so it's great to have that part of my life back again. Wrapping things up, if people were to want to look out for you on the World Wide Web and you wanted them to find you, Jeremy, where can people find
you? Oh my goodness, I don't have any social media. If you want to say hi to me, I am on The Source. I'm ESG on The Source. I'm also on some of the subreddits. I'm on the MTG Legacy subreddits. I'm ESG, the Emerald City. And I'm pretty much always at the Mox Boarding House, either the Ballad location or the Bellevue location for Legacy, and sometimes for other formats too. So, and I'm usually at big events. So Future Fan on Battleground, and when there's other 1K events, I'll probably show up and try to win those. So
this is a bit of a stretch, but you had mentioned in 2009 when you were first getting into Legacy that you wanted to play 10 land Stompy or 9 land Stompy.
Oh goodness.
Is that where the ESG title comes from?
But that's a very astute observation that I hadn't thought of. Elder Spirit Guide is just one of my favorite card arts. So that was resonant to me at the time when I was making my Source username. So that was one of the things I thought of, what would represent me. And I like the Emerald City connection, because Seattle's nickname is the Emerald City, and emeralds are green. So ESG makes green. It's kind of just a very neat way to tie things together.
And listen, you've never lived until you've pitched a spirit guide to pay for days.
Yeah.
Put that out there. Speaking of pitching spirit guides to pay for days, McBain, where can people find you?
What kind of transition was that?
I mean, you've done it a lot of times. I've seen it.
I guess you're right. I was totally on the green train. I wasn't focusing on the fact that there's the simian one as well, which is way less cool. Although playing a monkey is pretty great. Way better than the Monkey Blast. Oof, I got to do that the other day and it was fantastic. But you can find me at Servant Painter on Twitter.
Jeff, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at JeffDKK.
And if you want to talk about how a Elf Vines is better than a Monkey Blast, you can find me at Quinomori, and you can find us all at Canadian Thresh on Twitter. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you all in Two Thresholds. And a special thank you, Jeremy Andrews, again for joining us.
Oh.
Pleasure to have you, my man.
You're very welcome.
Hopefully we'll see you in person.
Elf Vines versus Monkey Blast. That sounds like something you take to a movie theater.
Monkey Blast is like a new tropical punch. Yeah.
No, you gotta mix them together, man.
Elf Vines is like a weird licorice.
Price me. Ooh, baby.